wish you success.
Welcome back to another exciting edition of the Vinnie Eastwood Show. And ladies and gentlemen, we actually have a rather remarkably awesome show lined up for you today. We're going to be speaking with a man named Peter Torkelson, who's my Kiwi collaborator for today. And he has made earthquake-proof housing material. And incidentally, got poisoned. Allegedly by the government or New Zealand intelligence services, so that they couldn't do it. Made out of recycled plastic, of all things. How very interesting. And in hour number two, author Preston Fleming will be joining us with his valuable time. He's the author of the Karmas trilogy, which is basically a sci-fi trilogy that involves copious quantities of futuristic police state measures. And what I'm going to ask him is just how many of these technocratic electronic police state measures are actually based in reality and or, and this is my concern, happening already. Speaking of police state measures happening already, if you don't think a police state is coming, it's staring you right in the Facebook. And I've set this as my status. Death to the New World Order. The velvet glove has come off to reveal the iron fist that we all knew it was covering. There is now nowhere to hide. It's time to pick a side. Are you with mankind or evil? And for me, it's not even a choice. And it really isn't a choice, I think. I mean, supposedly we were bestowed by God or something with this divinity so that we have that freedom of choice, which apparently no other species has. And for some reason, I find myself believing that humanity does, in fact, make the right choice, provided, of course, that it knows that it's even making one. Okay? A lot of people, those listening to this show perhaps for the first time, may have decided to make the choice to be a warrior for humanity. You maybe have valued your people, your country, and freedom itself more than your own life, just like me. It's something that you have to really fight for and preserve. And without question, don't do it. Terrible thing. We'll be right back on the EastwoodShow.com.
Oh, yeah. Tonight we're gonna make love. You know how I know? Because it's Wednesday. And Wednesday night is the night that we usually make love. It's because it's when everything is just right. There's nothing good on TV.
Welcome back
You haven't had your social netball team practice, huh?
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about business time. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room there. And for those of you who are listening at the moment and are in the chat room, I have to apologize profusely because, quite frankly, you fellas, you wind up in the chat room every day, and sometimes I completely forget about it and don't check it until about an hour and a half through the show. So I'm very sorry, but I'm looking at it now. And welcome, Aware Kiwi and Devilson. Speaking of Aware Kiwis, I have a very special Kiwi collaborator for you today, ladies and gentlemen. His name is Peter Torkelson, and he joins us now from his nice little Pilatos news bunker, broadcasting live from the fabulous Fluoride Council of New Zealand. Peter, welcome.
Hey, Vinny, how are you?
I'm pretty freaking awesome, man. I just spent last night in a giant Masonic lodge, and it made me feel very, very scared indeed.
Yeah, did I? Before.
Now, you've got some very interesting stories to tell here, Peter, and I'd love you if you could just preface for myself as well as the audience, of course, just a little bit about yourself and why you've asked to come on the show today.
Okay. I wanted to start with a disclaimer. Is that cool?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I start this interview on the Vinnie Eastwood Show with a legal disclaimer for Vinnie Eastwood and myself, Peter William Torkelson, and my supporters. Furthermore, as I was officially enforced potentially fatal drugs that cause brain damage and death by psychiatrists of the mental health service while I was recovering from a severe brain injury. This fact must therefore make my personal opinions legally null and void, but not the official scientific data or my legal right to compensation as per the New Zealand ratified United Nations Human Rights Act. Any obstruction of this law must be evidence of an obstruction of justice. In addition, my opinions are on the basis of international scientific medical data and to DNA, therefore the verifiable truth. As is the obstruction of scientifically verifiable, earthquake-proof, ecologically sustainable housing. That's my bit.
Okay. Let's go. All right. Now let's get into it. You've designed, as you said, sustainable earthquake-proof housing. What's it made out of?
Basically, recycled plastic.
Okay. Well, and there's copious quantities of plastic, indeed, even in the oceans now. They're talking about this, what they call this garbage flotilla. You know, there's plenty of uses for recycled plastic these days. Earthquake-proof housing might be pretty handy.
And it also will equate to a severe ecological issue for our children and grandchildren for 500 years, they reckon. They reckon it takes 500 years for plastic to break down. If you can make a house that lasts 500 years, it's got to be good for people, isn't it?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I can just imagine at the moment, any lodgings that are that old are basically like castles that were built in the Middle Ages or something like that. So you can just imagine these are middle-aged plastic houses, everybody's still living in them and that kind of stuff. It'd be awesome.
And the thing is, my initial backyard testing, I don't know if I've got a photo of it here, possibly not. There it is. I don't know if you can see this or not. It's
radio, Peter. We can't see anything.
Okay, sorry. I know it's Skype, but it's, yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah, my initial backyard testing, before getting officially tested at Forest Research Laboratories in Rotorua, you can't put a bullet through it. I poured petrol on it, you can't burn it, hit it with a sledgehammer, you can't break it. And this was also scientifically verified.
So, for all intents and purposes, indestructible.
Yeah.
Okay.
For all intents and purposes. Well, if you had, I'm sure that, you know, if you had a volcanic eruption, it could possibly be a problem. But apart from that, it is, for all intents and purposes, indestructible.
Now, to speak about natural disasters, earthquakes and such like that, the recent Japanese tsunami revealed the real danger of that kind of natural disaster. How exactly would this kind of building material fare in a tsunami?
Float?
It would float.
It would behave a little bit like a rubber ball.
So it would be quite interesting, really, if you're, tsunami comes in, if you know that your house is going to float. Not to mention, it'd be very interesting. Let's picture a scenario here. You're on the coast, and there's a community made out of these earthquake floating houses. Massive tsunami comes in. And so basically, what you have is all these people in their houses floating along on the water, that kind of thing, and then just bunching up in some big pile of rubble kind of somewhere elsewhere, but otherwise they're safe.
Well.
But then again, what will happen after that, Peter, is what's happening in Japan now, is that when the tsunami retreats back out to sea, everybody will be sucked out to sea.
Well,
we're floating in the Pacific.
We all have problems, don't we?
Hey, it's better than being washed away by the tsunami and being killed in the first place. At least then you get to, you know, enjoy a nice impromptu Pacific cruise.
You're right on. Yeah.
And who knows? Then you could probably link all the houses together with ropes or something and have a plastic indestructible flotilla.
Literally.
You could make an atoll out of it. Hey, in fact, that's a really good idea. Have you thought of that, Peter? Making one of these a plastic island out of this material.
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay. Now, back into the controversial topics. You, in fact, were force medicated by psychiatrists, as pretty much everybody else who goes to a psychiatrist who doesn't like them winds up being. And without question, it happens an awful lot. And the vast majority of the society are unaware of the kind of practices that are involved in that kind of quote-unquote treatment. And in my opinion, treatment kind of literally translates as eugenics policy.
I'm trying to refrain from appropriate expletives. Yes.
Well,
absolutely.
Yeah.
It is a monster, and it's got to be stopped. You know?
Now, you actually suffered a brain injury at the time, and you were in a coma for some time. Can you tell us about that incident?
Well, I can't really tell you too much about the coma, but yeah. So according to medical documentation and photos and what have you, several of them are on my website actually. I'm told I spent, I think it was 30 days in a coma. I lost 80% of my cognitive ability. I sometimes wonder what returned. While I was being taken into hospital by ambulance, I suffered respiratory arrest. Normally when you stop breathing, you're dead. I got, 3 grade 5 brain hemorrhages. They grade brain hemorrhages from 1 to 6. 6 is death, and I had 3 fives. I got meningitis, I'm told, while I was in hospital, and I had a shunt inserted between my brain and stomach. So, so I'm told.
Mm.
If it wasn't for the photos, I wouldn't believe a word of it. But, you know, the photos, you know, it's definitely me laying there in the bed.
Yeah. Yeah, and so how long were you in a coma for there?
I'm told a month.
a month. Okay. Okay.
And there's medical documentation that supports the photographic evidence as well.
Now the question then becomes, how exactly did you get put into a coma? Or more to the point, if we're going into speculative territory here, what's your best guess?
Okay, I cannot confirm this, but I have a hunch. My hunch is I was poisoned. But, however, that's my hunch. What isn't a hunch, and is scientifically verifiable, is that I was forced by the mental health services while I was recovering from brain hemorrhages, drugs that cause brain hemorrhages and death.
Mm.
And that is a fact.
Well, that sounds like a standard intelligence op to me. I know a guy called Greg Hallett, who's apparently had several attempts on his life with poisoning and things of that nature. Apparently, they put this sticky poison on your steering wheel, and he came back from overseas and jumped in his car at the airport. And when he got home, he had something to eat, and the poison on his fingers had gotten into his mouth. He'd been really sick for a couple of days, nearly died. And so that kind of reminds me of what you've gone through. And in terms of the psychiatric industry, one thing that we go into a lot on this show is just how brutal it can be. But more to the point, when it comes to intelligence operations or things of that nature, they're actually used as a stopper for dangerous people. Right? Dangerous to the establishment people. Claire Swinney from Chemtrails North New Zealand, she was forced into a mental institution and forced medicated for saying that 9/11 was an inside job, you know? But the judge didn't believe her. He said, no, kerosene's enough to pulverize 110 stories into dust. You must be crazy. and locked her away. And this is the thing that happens to people who, I don't know, try to do something good, I think, or try to step outside the mark, is that the government or the intelligence agencies or whatever, this is my suspicion, pure speculation on my part. I can't exactly back this up 100%. But they use the psychiatric industry as a method of silencing people. Now, what was it that you were doing, allegedly, that would have made them want to silence you? This earthquake-proof housing, who stood to lose in that equation if earthquake-proof housing that you've designed got into, say, mainstream production?
We're talking speculative assumptions here?
Yep.
Well, the architects of eugenics would not be in favour of it. There are several multinationals who won't benefit from it. That's it in a nutshell, I think.
Yeah, well, it's the thing. When you have enemies in high places, there's no telling how much Shiite Muslim can rain down on you.
Yeah. True.
And since the accident, well, in quotation marks, accident.
Yeah.
after you woke up, I mean, what kind of rehabilitation did you have to go through? What's life been like after allegedly being poisoned and put into a coma and force medicated? I can't imagine it would have been very easy.
No, well, it's cost me my family, as in my home life. Been trying to access justice to date has been impossible. I've got letters from the Minister of Justice, Health and Police. I've given them the evidence, as in the scientifically verifiable evidence, and they all try and just pass the buck. It's an obscenity.
That's what happens in this country, you know. Well, in fact, This is government in a nutshell worldwide, now that I see it, because the international bankers and policy setters, intelligence agencies are all linked up now, and they basically control our countries. You know, let's just get real here. Whoever our prime sinister is, he's not in control of the effing country, okay? He's a slave to his banker masters, you know? He's their dog. He may as well wear a freaking collar. I mean, I'm just going to destroy the country. Yes, I'm going to get it monstrously in debt. Oh, yeah. And I'm going to sell off all its state assets. And I'm going to make sure that the country does not have any independence for the rest of conceivable time.
Sorry, the Labour government upstaged them. They sold it all off years ago.
I know. And it's just the thing. It's a one-step, two-step program, isn't it? Because the bankers control both sides, it makes absolutely no difference between the red or the blue.
Yes.
And it's like, it seems to me that like the red is like, do you want to bleed to death slowly? And the blue is like, do you want to drown quickly?
No, blue, I presume, is the colour you will be when you're left out of the cold after they've sold all your assets off.
You might be right. You know, well, who knows? Maybe once we're all homeless, Peter, we'll burn down Parliament and then we'll sit around, you know, just to warm our hands on the ashes. You know, I've got some fingerless gloves.
coming back to, apart from wishful thinking, coming back to reality, the for anybody to obstruct earthquake-proof housing isn't ultimately insane because, you know, when the tectonic plates provide some serious rock and roll, they'll all get wasted if it's really serious. And to suppress earthquake, the housing that could actually save their lives, is ultimately, it's suicidal, isn't it? The buckets are bad.
Yeah, well, it's the thing. Suicidal nihilism is a term that I've seen bandied around. And in terms of an accurate description, that's basically that's the head honcho description as far as I'm concerned, you know, because suicidal nihilists don't care. It's like, hey, they'd blow up the nuclear plant at Fukushima if they could, just to create a freaking massive crisis to kill everybody off, just because they don't actually care about life itself and would rather it not exist. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. My very special guest from New Zealand is Peter Torkelson. We're talking about earthquake-proof housing and, of course, the fabulous mechanisms of the state of preventing anybody from getting anything done in this country. And we'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's simultaneously the fastest 2 hours in talk radio and the lighter side of genocide. Now, we were talking over the break, Peter, about insanity and how nice it would be if we were actually insane. That way we'd be capable of comprehending the way the world is truly run. Yeah, or at least that's my opinion. You know, maybe, I don't know, maybe I can do that, embrace the insanity. But a lot of other people, hey, they really don't want to do that. You know, we're living in a time now where insanity, in my opinion, is more commonplace than most people would realize. The Ministry of Health says that 1 in 5 people operate under some kind of mental disorder, whether that be depression or bipolar or any number of the 700 completely made-up diseases that the psychiatric industry decided was scientific via a hand-up vote. And they think that we're the crazy ones, right? Because we speak out, because we don't tolerate what's going on. It's the people that go to work every day and keep their heads down and try to be a good little slave who are the effing crazy ones. And the ones who, you know, yell and scream at the top of their voice, who talk about all this kind of terrible stuff going on, who try to absorb and deflect the reality of it in its entirety, they're the sane ones. Because they haven't given in to the madness.
What do I say?
Yeah.
However, right. You did touch on a point that I haven't put onto my website yet, but I possibly will, that when I was a child, just a few years ago, majority of the syndromes that are now common did not exist. Now, it is highly plausible that these zillions of syndromes are manufactured by the psychiatric industry, and it's just marketing. They just invent syndromes, then invent a drug to treat the syndrome that they've invented. And anybody who is honest, I don't know if the word has been removed from the dictionary or not, but anybody who's honest will admit they are not perfect, because I sure as hell know I'm not perfect. Now, the psychiatric industry, you know, psychiatrists, what have you, are also imperfect, and they are trying to tell me to take their drugs that can kill me to address my imperfections. I wish they would lead by example and take their fatal drugs first, and then I might learn by their example and change my mind. Okay?
Well, you might have actually, that's already happening, come to think of it. A lot of documented cases, apparently, it's my understanding, that psychiatrists are some of the most drugged up professions in the world. Kind of like a candy store owner eats lots of treats and sweets and stuff like that. Because they're surrounded by them all day long, and they've made it their profession. Likewise, Freudian slip there. A psychiatrist is surrounded by drugs every day. And according to my brother, who's a chiropractor who knows a few of these people, he says, yeah, man, they are hard out into their drugs. And so then, therefore, it's no wonder, seeing as they're getting drunk off their own brew, that they'd start doing crazy stuff.
Well, it sure as hell explains it.
Well, maybe I've just accomplished something there for you, Peter. I've managed to explain the sanity of psychiatrists because they're too doped up on their own product. This is the sick as society that we've got, isn't it? Where we have professionals in a position of trust who essentially are used as, I don't know, like the attack dogs of the state to really just destroy human life. It's almost like we're living in a Terminator movie or something relatively insane like that. And where do they get the ideas for those movies, by the way? It's just like we've had this sort of Skynet, the psychological Skynet set up, and we're all plugged into it in some way, shape, or form as part of this overreaching machine. And as a result, the caterpillar tracks of this giant machine, basically, they roll over everybody's skulls. You know? And it's about crushing the human spirit. And the roots of psychiatry, is my understanding, that the term bedlam described a mental house in England where they had the mentally ill, people who were, you know, genuinely a little bit crazy, and some people who probably weren't that crazy at all, and they pretty much just tortured them all day long. And then, as their torture started to drive them progressively more insane, because nothing would drive you crazy like being tortured for no good reason and then being locked in a cold cell by yourself with nobody to talk to, so that you become detached socially and the only other human beings you meet are people that torture you or people that point at you and laugh, right? So then it would be no wonder. And again, it's just like the drugs that they manufacture for the conditions that they make up. The entire thing of psychiatry is at its base level a complete and total fraud, which in my opinion is causing, what are we saying? I think I saw a documentary called Psychiatry, An Industry of Death. And also another documentary, great one, called Making a Killing. And apparently, according to these, psychiatry is one of the leading causes of death. Number one cause of death in the 20th century, people's own governments. We're talking about like the Chinese Communist government, who killed 60 million people, Pol Pot, who killed a million, and so on and so forth. Number two is psychiatry. And the third is the medical industry, right? And incidentally, they're all inextricably linked. So we have the government, psychiatrists, and mad medical men all causing huge quantities of death, right?
And it's taxpayer-funded.
Taxpayer-funded death operations. Now, does that not sound like eugenics policy to you? It certainly does to me. You know, and that's what we've got. We have a eugenics-funded, operated, and fully complicit set of professionals. Now, on top of this, there's also a lot of other links, because in order to maintain such an evil system, you would also have to have an awful lot of blocks in place. So if anybody found out about it, that they would either be demonized as being insane, or if they tried to expose it, that they wouldn't have enough of a voice to do it, or they would be blocked at every single turn before they could make a difference, or they would isolate you from your family and try to get you alone and weak. And there's all of these really what I consider terrorist principles that are being applied in our own population, and indeed those across the world, via these mechanisms. Now, I think that in your case, Peter, like I said on the phone to you when we chatted earlier, it's a textbook case. You know, you get weakened. If they can't kill you, they'll weaken you, and preferably, you'll go away. You know, you'll try and lick your wounds and just lie down. And why have you decided not to lie down though after going through all this?
Pardon the expression, because I'm a belligerent son of a bitch. The reality is, the only training I had was in the Defence Forces as a combat soldier, trained to protect. These bastards force fatal drugs on people, and the bastards have got to be stopped. But the catch is, I cannot lower myself to their standard, so I have got to do this legally. As much as there are other options, I cannot use those options because it would mean selling out my own integrity and my respect for life. And, you know, they might be low-life bastards, but they are still life. And we're not in a civil war. I don't have the right to waste them. And I don't want to waste anybody anyway. That's just the heart and truth of it. Yeah, I want to benefit people and still do and still will. E.g. my invention.
Yeah. Well, you know, your invention, while it's pretty remarkable, and quite frankly, I've never heard of it. And what I think is that, yeah, this material needs to really go into, well, basically overdrive production. You know what I'm saying?
Oh,
because it's absolutely necessary. And look at just Auckland, for example. I believe it was the national government who relaxed the building codes. And now in Auckland, we have something like 10,000 houses plus that have quote unquote leaky building syndrome, where they didn't treat the timber properly. And there's all this mold and people are getting sick. And the government's saying, oh, well, you know, we'll pay for a quarter of the cost of repairs, which is basically the cost of the house in the first frickin' place, and you have to pay for the rest, taxpayer, local government council, which is done by the taxpayer anyway. So it's like, we caused the problem, and you have to pay for it, and you have to pay for it again, and you have to pay for it again. And then you'll be happy that we made you pay for it, because it means that you'll be less stressed out that we robbed you and destroyed your life and freaked you out. Now, this is in contrast to, say, for example, the Canadian government, when they had a similar row over leaky building syndrome, and they automatically, just like that, said, okay, I don't care. We're going to give everybody interest-free loans to repair their homes, and then we'll debate about the money later, because what we don't want to have is our citizens in a freezing cold winter situation dying because their houses were improperly constructed. Right? And I thought that was quite a logical and well-meaning idea. But they don't do that anymore, do they? it's like, for some reason, people still trust government, you know, implicitly. You'll ask anybody whether or not they trust everything the government says, and they'll automatically say no. But whenever the government speaks, they don't talk back. You know, this is the thing. If you have somebody who's lying to you, don't sit there and keep listening to the lies. Interrupt them and say, no, hold on a second. You're a liar. Shut up. I don't care what you've got to say because it's complete and total BS. You are scum. You are selling out this country. You are destroying everything that the previous generations have worked for to build. And what gives you the right to do that? Nothing. So I have the right to interrupt you. I have the right to resist you. And I have the right to expose you for the crimes against this country and this and our people. Okay? That's my perspective. And I could be wrong. maybe being a subservient slave will wind up taking this country in a better direction. What do you think, Peter?
Did you use the term bullshit a few moments ago?
Oh, it's a BS. You've got
BS, sorry.
We're not allowed to say the actual word on air. But,
yeah. My apologies. You know, as I mentioned on my disclaimer, you know, having been brain damaged by the by mental health services, I screw up occasionally because I'm mentally incapacitated, having been nearly murdered by them several times over. But anyway, that's cool.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we apologise if Peter is occasionally slow, but he's got a very good excuse, a better one than the government at least. And we'll be right back after the break with more of The Lighter Side of Genocide.
One thing I need to know, who's that? Are you? And I won't stop. And it feels so good to be alive and on top. My reach is global, my tower secure. My cause is noble, my power is pure. I can hand out a million vaccinations. Don't let them all die in exasperation. Have them all healed from the laceration. Have them all killed by assassination. I can make anybody go to prison just because I don't like them. And I can do anything with no permission. I have it all under my command because I can guide a missile by satellite. By satellite. By satellite. And I can hit a target
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about showing the lighter side of genocide. My very special guest from New Zealand is Peter Torkelson, the inventor of earthquake-proof housing, which apparently an awful lot of people don't want to see round. But, you know, speaking of earthquake-proof housing, the Japanese solution to this was quite interesting. They made their houses out of paper so that when the earthquakes happen in Japan, as they often do, you don't get crushed by your house. You know, that's a grand solution. That's an old school solution. And nowadays, we have better technology. We have a better understanding of science, and we can make things that are, well, far superior to paper, I'd say. And yeah, at least the stuff, if you pour petrol on it, can't burn down. So I don't know. You probably wouldn't even need a smoke alarm, would you, mate?
Possibly not. So we're still with you. I'm still with you, am I?
Yeah.
I just wanted to state this, and I'll probably have to state it more than once. The evidence that substantiates this interview is on my website, Human Rights Denied, or under p.w.torkelson. So it's, yeah, anyway. That's my bit. So, carry on. It's all yours there.
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that, mate.
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, well, the thing I was thinking about, Peter, is that if we're living in a world these days that's basically run by crazy sociopathic scum, and I think that's pretty self-evident. What do you do about it, right? Now, personally, I think it's like we're living under this, I don't know, this brain mush, really. Everybody's so propagandized. They're conditioned through their education. They're conditioned through television. And, you know, what I find very interesting is that you'll watch movies, and then a year or two later, the science will be released that actually proves that this sci-fi movie is, in fact, a reality and indeed possible. For example, Avatar, a movie where they talked about transporting consciousness to a robotic creature, you know, put a human mind into a artificially created creature. It's like, wow, that's revolutionary. And then I think it was last week, article comes out saying that that's exactly what they're planning to do, to transport consciousness onto machines that they've put onto other worlds, you know, to transport consciousness to a machine that they've got on the moon or Mars or the Voyager spacecraft. Who knows? It'd be very strange and freaking awesome, but don't you find it interesting that for some reason that movie came out just before they made that announcement? You know, it's all coordinated. And I think it's like people often don't look deeper, you know. They don't see the hidden hands. They don't see the iron fist beneath the velvet glove. They don't see the pain before it hurts them. You know what I'm saying? If you swim with crocodiles, you assume, of course, that you might get eaten. You know, you might be locked into the jaws and experience some kind of death roll. And that's pretty straightforward. If you're going into any kind of dangerous situation, you understand, hey, I'm in a dangerous situation, I need to take care of myself. But at the moment, on the other hand, what we have is a bunch of, well, basically jellyfish citizens in all of our countries who are spineless, float on the current. They don't think about anything. You know, I talked to people who voted for John Key in the last government. Now, occasionally, I'll find people who regret it. But on the whole, despite all the police state measures like search and surveillance bill and this new censorship bill, basically going out over the internet, our state assets being sold off, and goodness knows what else. You know, it's just a laundry list of bad stuff that he's done. In fact, I got to the point where I was with Sue Bradford from the Greens on the radio a while back, and we tried to make a small list, you know, of all the things National was done, and we couldn't make a small list. It was actually quite a long one, and we missed out about half of what could have possibly been put in there about the bad stuff that they've done. You know, it's like freaking blitzkrieg on our democracy, and I don't really believe in democracy anyway because, obviously, it doesn't work. If democracy worked, occasionally people would get a government that doesn't suck and doesn't destroy the country and sink it further and further into debt to international bankers who really love the idea of democracy because it means that they can just fund a candidate like Barack H. O'Barry or John Key and give them copious quantities of cash for advertising anonymously or even publicly, as has been done with Barack Obama. And then, surprise, surprise, the person who has had the largest amount of donations winds up winning the election campaign. Who would have thunk it? How absolutely crazy. You mean people who spend copious quantities of cash financing evil scum wind up getting those evil scum into power? What a revolutionary concept that is. Oh, mate. Well, Peter, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show with us today. And I really want to try and see if I can introduce you some people. And if anybody can help Peter perhaps develop his product, get it for sale, or anything along those lines, if you can do anything to help, please email producer@thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and we'll see what we can do to connect you up. Coming up next hour, ladies and gentlemen, we have an author named Preston Fleming who's going to be coming on, talking about his futuristic sci-fi trilogy of novels and just how real that sci-fi police state is starting to be in this day and age. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room if you dare. And also, interestingly enough, GorillaMedia.co.nz, New Zealand's alternative media. And what's interesting about Guerrilla Media is that it's actually starting to get kind of widely viewed. In fact, I went to a party, a fundraiser for Christchurch Quake, right? And this guy comes up to me at the end of the night and says, "Hey, do you work for Guerrilla Media?" And I said, I am Guerrilla Media. He's like, "Oh, that guy!" You know, you know, it's freaking awesome. No matter where you go, you always meet a really valuable and really awesome truther. It's like you can't help it. We're freaking everywhere. Speaking of truthers everywhere, we have a very fabulous guest on the line for you, ladies and gentlemen. His name is Preston, and he joins us now on the line from the USSA. Preston, welcome. Now, I'd love if you could just give us a breakdown, just who you are and these books that you've authored. Okay. And we're getting in some information from our producer at the moment. We can't actually hear Preston speaking. I can, but apparently the people who are listening on the streams can't at the moment. So, yeah, we've basically got dead air going out at the moment. So let's try and reconnect us back up. Coming up in 30 seconds, baby, we're going to have a wee break. So we'll try and reconnect Preston for you, ladies and gentlemen. But basically, he's done a trilogy called the Coaster Trilogy about a futuristic prison camp that we're all going to soon love and enjoy. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. Join us in the chat room and we'll be right back after the break.
We got to change the way we see the problem if we're gonna fix this place. My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino, I'm Latino, Tonga, we don't know the banks. The parliament does so where do I stand? They pay in their bills off your back with heavy tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contraband. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to our planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. That's all about planned absurdity, because I definitely plan to be absurd. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. And we have our special guest, Preston Fleming, live from the USSA, the former republic, and now basically a dictatorship under mein Führer Barack H.O. Barry. Preston, welcome back. Well, the thing is, we were capable of hearing you in the studio just fine, but apparently the internet streams weren't picking you up. So hopefully my producer will let me know whether or not we can hear you at the moment. But let's continue on, assuming that, you know, it's all good. So I'm just going to have to budge in here. Unfortunately, we the people listening to the internet streams can't hear you, Preston, at all, which I think is really quite freaking tragic, because what you're saying is really freaking awesome. And I apologize to the affiliates about this technical issue. We don't know exactly what's wrong. I can hear Preston just fine and we're having a good conversation, but the problematic difficulty with technology, especially when the Mercury's in retrograde, is that communications basically just get a little bit effed up. And this is deeply problematic. And Preston, do you have Skype or something that we might be able to connect you on? Okay. Let's see if we can connect you up on a different phone number. Yeah. If you could call in, that would be good. If you've got a pen and paper there, the number is 402-237-2525. That's 402-237-2525. That's the number to call in there. And we just have to get the caller line open. But in the meantime, just stay on the line there, Preston, and I'll just pontificate until the caller line is open for you to ring in as it is. Now, one thing that I was kind of talking about with a friend of mine the other day is that the future is sort of like always is and always has been like now. You know, it doesn't matter what's going to happen tomorrow or what's happened in the past, quite frankly. It's the decisions that we make right now in this particular moment that really do sort of chart the course for human history and make things really work. Now, I think that in our society, people have become sort of simultaneously short-sighted, you know, not wanting to look into things quite as much as they possibly should, like seeing ramifications, ripples in the water, and knowing that those ripples are eventually going to hit land somewhere, you know what I'm saying? And because people have got their blinders on, it's just basically it's just basically nothing really gets realized, nothing changes, and we sort of progress down this path unwittingly. You know, there's absolutely nothing that you can do about people in terms of what direction they're heading, because they kind of chart their own course. You know, and that's speaking from an individual point of view. But if I was a government, if I was a giant media slovenly corporation full of copious quantities of intelligence agents to screw over everybody, I could accomplish that quite easily. You can coerce people's conformity and turn their brains basically into mush so that you can mold them any way you like. And this is the problem that I find with our society, is that people have allowed themselves to be molded. You know, they've allowed themselves to be lied to. They've believed it because it sounds really rosy. You know, it's like we're all Sleeping Beauty and we're just waiting for our Prince Charming to come along. But the reality is, we've forgotten that we've taken a bite out of a poison apple. And my take is that if we have anything that's worth doing, it's worth doing well, right? And, you know, in terms of media, radio, or other things of that nature, it's very important to get this kind of information and this sort of thought process out there, even if it's to an audience that isn't receptive, okay? In fact, I'd probably stress it to say it's actually more important to get it out to people who have not heard it before than it is for those of us who are already in the know, those of us who already understand the New World Order and all of that kind of stuff. And I'm just asking our board op now, do we have the caller line open? I'm not 100% sure if that's going yet. Adam, could we open up the caller line, please? That would be good, so we can get Preston on there. No, I can hear the guest, but the audience apparently can't. Now, hold on a second. We're just opening it up now. I'll give you the word, Preston, once it's up and running. Now, continuing on with my pontification about the future and how important it is, I was kind of thinking about what we call the moment. Right? You know how certain people, they say, oh, I'm just living in the moment, I'm living for the right now, and I'm trying to get everything sorted. And, you know, for some reason, people think that living in the moment is a temporary thing, but I don't think so. I think living in the moment is actually a permanent thing, because life is basically one consistent moment, you know? And there is only one moment in your whole life, and it's this one. Right here, right now, what are you going to do about it? Okay, Preston, the caller line is now open, so you can give that a call right now, and we'll bring you up on air with us. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, I apologize for the technical difficulties, folks. I don't know what's going on, but apparently, and this is happening in a lot of places, in fact, technology is failing all over the place. I think it was like our somewhat fabulous producer, Mr. Mitch Santel, his big fat iMac that he's been busting his hump on to try and get the word out about this show and contact guests for us and pitch investors and helping out the team at AFR. And well, basically, he's just an absolute machine. And the problem is that the main tool that he's using to do all his work exploded not too many days ago. And apparently it's going to cost almost as much to fix as it would be to buy a whole new iMac. So I don't know. We're going to hopefully, I don't know, start a money bomb or a donation poll or something, so that we can get him back on his computer. But the problem is that when technology fails, and if it's the only thing that you really got, you're basically screwed. All right. Now, we have on the line here Preston Fleming, I believe, and we'll just unmute him. Now, Preston, welcome.
We're back.
Okay. Now, we'll just hopefully be able to hear you coming out on the internet streams. Go ahead and again, tell us about your book.
Yes, my name is Preston Fleming, and I've written the Camus Trilogy, which is a series of three novels set in the future in an impoverished, war-torn, low-tech America. The first one, 40 Days at Camus, is set in a corrective labor camp in 2024 in the town of Camus, Utah, out in the west, out in the Wasatch Front in the mountains near the Rocky Mountains. And then the second one is set in Boston in 2029 as a follow-up. Essentially, the events that follow the revolt are play out in Boston. And then the third one, I'll Die Later, is set in a variety of places, including Utah and the Yukon and in Europe. That is set earlier to show more of what happened to make this America, this American nightmare come true. When the American democracy gets replaced by American tyranny, there is a possibility of these kinds of camps coming into play. And so the novels are essentially designed to have people feel and experience what it's like emotionally to be in a situation that is hard to imagine. And so in these novels, I'm trying to take people forward to the kind of America we don't want to happen, but that could well happen if we aren't careful.
Well, this is the thing. Being careful, it seems to be lost on a lot of people these days, particularly when it pertains to politics, because for some reason, they think that politics doesn't affect them. And the reality is, it affects absolutely every single aspect of your life, okay? You know, try telling the 6 million exterminated Jews that that politics didn't mean anything to them, okay? It was politics that killed them, you know, the politics of eugenics. And nowadays, I think that the politics of eugenics is running strong.
You know, folks in America would love to be able to listen to the authorities and who are saying, basically, move on, folks, nothing to watch here. Just go ahead and ignore what you see. And a lot of folks don't want to believe nasty things. They don't like to talk about them, and they don't want to do anything about them. And so they're very much susceptible to the kind of blandishments we get from both the media and our politicians who are in the business of buying votes. So this is why I'm afraid that we have a polarized America now of some folks who are who see it and have woken up and really want change. They want to reduce the size of the government because the government is the only thing, the federal government, is the only entity that can really take away our freedoms. And the pile is so big that essentially it is affecting every aspect of society. But then the other folks, they're happy to take from the government. They're happy to let things happen because they're not ready to make any changes, and they deny and are antagonized by folks who are ready to reduce the pile, so to speak.
Well, the pile of what is what I want to refer to when we talk about the government.
Well, certainly, yeah. I'm referring to the pile of money, the money that's taken in taxes and is up for grabs in Washington. And it used to be that, you know, 20, 30 years ago, businessmen were in the business of making products at a price that people could afford, of things that were useful. And today, too many businessmen, and I studied business and I studied law, and I normally would be very pro-business, but today you have so many businesses of the larger kind that are looking for handouts, guarantees, subsidies, tariffs, rules against their competitors, something that will make things easier for them at the taxpayer's expense. And so we have big finance, big government, big business, big academia, big media, all ganging together against the taxpayer and against the person who's trying to live his own life and make a living.
Does that mean inherently that the bigger you get, the more tyrannical you become?
I think there is a certain association there. There's certainly power goes with size, and as we know from I think it was Edmund Burke that said, you know, absolute power breeds absolute corruption. So we have a stage where there is so much at stake in Washington that folks have given up doing their own thing and are trying to grab the pile of money. And it's the point where we're at a turning point, Vinny, in America, where either we, the people, tell the government, here's how much you can have and no more, and we're going to live our lives as we please, or the government will be telling us, here's how much you can keep, and meanwhile, we'll tell you how to run your lives. And I think we're very close to that point.
Yeah. Well, it reminds me of being a child back in school, you know what I'm saying? And everything's sort of regulated, you know, your hair has to be a certain length, you have to tuck in your socks, you have to do all this, and you feel like a slave, you know? And I think that's probably what the new American condition is, to feel like a slave. And
you know,
unfortunately,
that's true on several levels, Vinny. And I try to look at facts and data and mechanisms of how things work. I look at the motives and the incentives that drive behavior. And just a few weeks ago in one of our national newspapers, the Wall Street Journal, there was an article about increased state licensing of a variety of professions. And they used the example of the shampoo helper in a beauty parlor. Now, in itself, that doesn't sound so harmful or dangerous to have to license the shampoo artist. But essentially what it means is that more and more people have their livelihood controlled by these licensing procedures. And if you're a kind of person that speaks truth to power and who actually makes for change, then you're going to run afoul of some kind of petty official who will haul you in front of the licensing board and say, Mr. Jones, Mr. Smith, what are you saying here? Defend yourself or you lose your license to make a living. And now that's so rampant, and the abuse of it is so rampant, that I'm afraid that we're really at risk of having a chilling effect on people's free speech.
I think you're absolutely correct, and it is a self-evident truth that the truth is being covered up, and if you say it, you might experience some kind of repercussions. My very special guest is Preston Fleming, coming to us live from the former USSA, and we'll be right back.
Now you and your family and friends can enjoy the cleanest, most delicious, and healthy drinking water anytime, even while traveling, camping, at sporting events, or in emergency situations. The Berkeleyte removes bacteria, cysts, parasites, and harmful chemicals to below detectable levels. It also reduces nitrates and unhealthy minerals like lead and mercury, while leaving in the beneficial and nutritional minerals your body needs. Berkeleyte is so powerful, it can even purify raw, untreated water from remote lakes and streams. And the optional PF2 filters even remove fluoride. The Berkeleyte LED, with its rechargeable lighting system, can be used as a nightlight or a camp light. To view or purchase your Berkey water system and replacement filters, please visit American Freedom Radio's website at AmericanFreedomRadio.com and click the Berkey banner. Once again, that's AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and click the Berkey Water banner. Not yet available in Iowa.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
My name's John, and I've been having problems with my blood pressure for years. My doctor's tried everything without much success. I heard about Extendovite from a friend and thought, why not give it a try? It's been 3 months now, and my doctor's very pleased with how my blood pressure's finally coming down. I have a lot more energy than I've had in a long time. It's working for me.
For 12 years now, I've been helping people. My name is Don Wiskin, and I want you to know Extendovite works. If you're looking for more energy or just want to be as healthy as you can, now is the time to join the growing list of real people benefiting from Extendovite. To order, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822. Or visit our website at heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Back, broadcasting live from the future, from the criminal island paradise of New Zealand, live from the future, from the fabulous fluoride head capital of Auckland, New Zealand, my very special guest, The Godfather. It's Preston Fleming, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back.
Happy to be back.
Yeah, yeah. Now, speaking of criminal masterminds, the New World Order, okay, and I'm sure you're obviously aware of this. You wouldn't be doing authoring books of the nature that you do without them. And one thing that really strikes me is that they plan well in advance. You know, everything that every bit of legislation that's passed that fulfills New World Order agenda, and in my opinion, it's virtually every bit of legislation that's been passed in the last, 20, 30 years, has served inexorably to, you know, make bankers richer, the people more destitute, and freedom more scarce, you know? And so with your book and all of that, you're seeing the future before it happens, right? I wanted to ask you, I mean, what was your real inspiration for actually getting down and nutting out these novels?
Well, I wrote 40 Days of Camus before 9/11. I was living in a place I loved out west, doing work I enjoyed, but I had a feeling that it might not last, that things were on the wrong track. And at the time, I was doing a lot of reading, and one of the things that I had read was, let me backtrack a second. I had, after having served for 11 years in the U.S. Foreign Service, being a diplomat, mostly in the Middle East during those years, I also went back to law school and practiced tax law, and then I did some business in the Russian Far East, in the western part or the eastern part of Russia, where they used to have most of the gulag. And so I became pretty familiar with that period of history. And so back in 2000, I had read The Gulag Archipelago. And one of the stories in Volume 3 concerned a corrective labor camp revolt in 1953 in Kazakhstan. And I was so inspired by the story, I took the germ of that event, transposed it into the future in America with American characters, because I thought, well, what if you had that kind of situation in America? How would Americans behave? And frankly, in my experience, the Russians and Americans are very similar in many respects. And I think that Russians and Germans and Chinese aren't the only people who are capable of having tyranny or totalitarianism. Given the events that happened there, I think if we had similar events, we might have a similar outcome here. So that's how it got started. I wrote a second book some years later, based on the same premise, different characters, but the same future America. And, you know, Vinny, my greatest concern over the last 10 years has been my books would become true before they were published. So I finally had to get on the stick and get them out into the public.
Well, yeah, before they lose their marketability.
Well, before everyone knows that it is here and the warning value has lost its opportunity.
Yeah, well, or before it becomes a non-fiction novel, you know.
That's right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and this is the interesting thing, you know, it sort of society perplexes me because I feel that we are actually living in a fiction novelist paradise, right? You can't make this stuff up.
That's right. And also, I listen to Coast to Coast as well, Vinny, and I think you're really on track with the view about we create our own future based on what we do in the moment today. And so I'm very conscious of the moment and conscious of these choices. And I think that right now people are collective. If they're awake, they have a huge effect on the future. If they're asleep, if they're simply following the leader and watching their TVs, then they're essentially going to be swept away by these cycles of history.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and it's like, I don't know, as if history itself is some description of washing machine and it has certain cycles, you know, like there's the general wash cycle where everything just kind of gets mixed up. And you know, speaking in a psychological sense here, there's the wash cycle where you feel all mixed up. And then, of course, there's the spin cycle where everything just starts going absolutely crazy. And then eventually there is the dry cycle where you just kind of tumbled over before everything suddenly stops and finishes, you know? And in the marine sense of the word, you wind up getting hung out to dry. And I don't like to be negative or any of that kind of stuff. That's why I laugh so often, because I try to deny reality. It's the only way you can stop it from depressing you, really. Because, quite frankly, the interesting thing about being an activist, being a truther, being a patriot, somebody who actually gives a flying F about society, to put it blunt, is that you understand the ramifications of your actions perhaps somewhat more than the average unwitting slave. And in a way, that kind of gives me confidence, because it means that, hey, I am actually quite powerful, and everything that I do has a ramification to it. So therefore, I should be doing stuff all the time, and I should not stop, right? How do you feel about that?
But I'd like to pick up on your idea of the force of those of the wash cycles, because there's a book very popular in America called The Fourth Turning by two historians, Neil Howe and Bill Strauss, and they essentially track 80 to 100-year cycles back through in a number of countries, but in America, the book is written focused on America, back to pre-colonial days. And right now, according to their predictions and their tracking these cycles, we are at the end of what they call the fourth turning, which is the rough edge of the four cycles, where things reach a crisis level and then they start over again with building things back up. And the last of these cycles was World War II. So you can see the scale of this. And right now, the generation that the 20-year-olds today are essentially the GI generation to come. They're going to be facing something in their early young lifetimes that will form their adult characters. And we don't know exactly what it is yet. It could be something like a natural disaster, or it could be a hyperinflation, it could be a war, it could be pestilence. Well, nobody knows exactly, but this crisis, according to these cycles, is coming, and we are in the tumble cycle.
Yeah. Which means that it's only a matter of time before we're hung out to dry.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that time will be actually welcome relief, I think.
My concern is,
that, you know, in fiction, you know, back in 1935 during our depression, you know, when fascism was raging in Europe, we had a lot of threats of fascism or left wing takeover in America, and there was a book called "It Can't Happen Here," which was actually taking place in a similar kind of, well, in a dated kind of corrective labor camp in Vermont in the 30s. The book was very influential, though, I think, in forming public opinion, and is now it's kind of a household word in America. It can't happen here. People say it ironically now. And I think that today we need somebody to wake us up to see, well, not only could it happen here, but here's how it could happen.
Yeah, like I... These false flag events like 9/11 and the swine flu epidemic and all of these things, those motivate society. I know that the New World Order knows this, that fear and directly perceived external threats generally galvanizes and motivates society very, very quickly. I remember when I was 15 years old during 9/11, the amazing quantity of Americana and patriotism that suddenly appeared out of nowhere. Americans were depressed, upset. They're starting to see that their country was descending into tyranny. And then, hey, suddenly we're under attack and we're all one big happy family again, right? And that illusion, I'm not sure how long that illusion has lasted. I think it's starting to wear off now like a bad drug.
Well, I think we saw how quickly fortunes can change based on these kinds of sentiments. You know, within a year after the 9/11, President Bush won, was a hero, his highest popularity ever. Then about a year later, he was in the tank. So people have very fickle views on these things. And during the terrorist threats that happened in the couple of years after 9/11, every time there was some kind of a terrorist event, I would hear on talk radio and elsewhere, and not necessarily right-wing talk radio, people talking about, well, we ought to have camps to put away these suspected terrorists. And it would be like clockwork. People would forget about it, then it would come back on, and folks would talk about camps again after each one of these threats. So it seemed to me that if we had an actual terrorist event, maybe a 9/11 or something not even as big, the idea of camps would become a common parlance again. And to me, it's dangerous that people can swing on such small events. Given a big event, how widely could they swing?
Now, does that I'm not sure. Does that demonstrate just how flippant and easily manipulated and weak-minded we are?
I think it shows that we're emotional, and we tend to think in extremes sometimes in America. And given a little bit of leadership or egging on, people are willing to do things that in a more sober moment they wouldn't entertain. So I think people are capable of being manipulated. Sometimes, though, you know, Vinny, my adage is this: I don't presume conspiracy where incompetence and ignorance will do. And we've got so much of that around that it takes a lot of provocation for me to assume conspiracy. But there's so much log rolling, and there's so many incentives built in to the growth of government power and the abuse of power at levels of local as well as state and federal, that you see things that are hard to explain other than by concerted action. But a lot of times people moving in the same direction aren't doing so deliberately. They're just moving because they have the same incentives or motivators.
Yeah, yeah. It's like two people can reach the same conclusion or be working on the same thing, approaching it from completely different directions, you know? And this happens in the Patriot movement as well as it does in the New World Order movement, where people will just, you know, completely independent of each other, just reach the same goals, right? And I think that's very interesting. I think that speaks to just how interconnected we all are and just how valuable a community is, really, because it's all of our ideas collectively and independently that really hold value. And what I find disturbing about government and policy and censorship and these police state things is that it suppresses community spirit, it suppresses creativity, and it suppresses any form of freedom, which is the source of light, liberty, and progress, right? Essentially, they're trying to halt progress. You know, it's like, we've made enough progress, thank you very much. Now we want to make you all into a post-feudal state.
Yeah, yeah. The authorities and the experts and the people who are often the talking heads on television, their mindset is to assume that everything is on a trend that will continue. They don't have any sense of innovation of things that are unpredictable, and so they're always saying, "Well, things are going to end badly," and they're selling short the idea of progress. You know, not long ago, we had James Baker and Joe Biden ready to partition Iraq just before it turned and the forces of democracy in Iraq started winning. So often, similarly, they sell the economy short just before a turnaround, and when tax revenues go up because of the economy is growing, they're prepared to stifle that. That and assume it's a zero-sum game and start raising taxes. So there are many authorities that are dead wrong, repeatedly wrong, but because they hold positions prominent positions in academia or in former government officials, people listen to them, although they've been wrong again and again.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and this kind of brings up the point. If we always are constantly looking for all the answers in the wrong places, why is it a surprise that we're wrong 100% of the time? You know, it's like, hey, I don't know why this policy is being implemented. I'll go ask the government who implemented the policy and ask them to explain it to me, right? It's just like, well, hold on a second. That's the last place you want to go.
They'll always come up with an explanation. They always have half-baked explanation that doesn't hold water.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it was we were talking with Stuart Swerdlow of Expansions.com, and I think he's coming on the show next week. He said that, basically, they need new writers.
Yeah.
Because their cover stories are just like, I don't know. If you tried to make a Hollywood movie out of the cover stories that the government actually puts out to the public, I mean, like, you know, that it let's just put it bluntly, it wouldn't win an Oscar or a Golden Globe or nothing, you know. In fact, the film wouldn't get made. It's just true testament to the government syndrome of suppression of creativity and community, isn't it? That they can't actually come up with any creative solutions for why they're doing evil stuff to us to convince us that they're not. My very special guest is Preston Fleming from the USSA, and we'll be right back after the break. It's the Heartbreaker. Welcome. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. It's the lighter side of genocide, because if you lose your sense of humor amidst such a world of chaos and madness, you will go friggin' nuts. And joining me is another remarkably sane person considering the circumstances. It's Preston Fleming. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Hey, what were we talking about? Oh, yes. Have you ever seen the original film, The Day the Earth Stood Still?
Oh, yes, definitely.
Okay. Now, that really speaks to me, especially in the modern context, you know, when it comes to false flag terrorism. And in more recent times, there's a lot of talk about the alien disclosure. And something tells me that Hollywood and, you know, television and all of those kind of things, that it's almost like they're trying to make these timeless gems so that they still are relevant to an audience today as they were back then, you know, like Pretty Woman, for example, you know, and that's the kind of thing that I find nowadays, is that just like in Pretty Woman, how the guy doesn't have any anything that he creates with his work or his job. He just buys companies and splits them up and sells them off, and basically he destroys industry for a living. You know, he destroys struggling industry. And at the end of the film, he decides that he's actually going to start making things. You know, he's actually going to start contributing something to the world rather than just making something like money, right? And that made me think that the most valuable things in this world are the things that you can't buy with money.
Well, that reminds me of when I was younger, I remember reading about Stavros Niarchos. At that time, he was a competitor of Onassis, and he was one of the richest men in the world. And what he did on his vacations was go to some little island that he owned, live in a small stone hut, and eat simple food prepared by a local old woman on the island. That was his idea of a good time. And I thought, you know what? How about if I short-circuit this? Why don't I, instead of trying to earn $1 billion and then retire to this island, why don't I just live a simple life, live like him? Because obviously he's a smart guy. He's got something there. Maybe I don't need to actually go through the whole cycle in order to arrive at the right destination.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's kind of like queue jumping, you know? And I do that on occasion. You know, to the frustration of others. But it's like, well, you know, you snooze, you lose, okay? You left a gap. And I've found an opportunity where I can get ahead, and I take it, right? And that's basically the strange thing about government, is that essentially they're the people that have no cue whatsoever, okay? All the rest of us have to, and they have an automatic cue jumping permission, basically.
Well, you know, that's a very important point these days in particular. We have, when we look at the extreme set of extreme case of the Soviet Union, where they had the workers' paradise, of course, the Communist Party had separate clinics, separate stores, separate apartment buildings, separate educational institutions. Essentially, the elite in name, lived like everyone else, but in reality, they had a whole apartheid system of better living conditions. Today in America, there's also the growth of a double standard. And I'm going to raise a controversial point here. You know, there's a controversy now about this birth certificate thing for President Obama. And the pundits are all saying, well, let's go on to other subjects. You know, he's already elected. Let him have it. And the people in the working area in America, the people who work for a living, say, wait a second. To apply for a job or anything, I've got to submit all kinds of documentation. And they go over them with a fine-tooth comb. How is it that somebody can get to be a senator and even president, and he doesn't even have a birth certificate, and he spends $2 million trying to cover up the lack of a birth certificate? I mean, how fair is that? And in fact, we have a case where Americans are saying, why do we have to go through all these rules when Congress automatically exempts themselves from these rules? The congressional retirement system is a gold mine. There's all these double standards that get worse and worse. You know, how is it that the sons and daughters of senators and congressmen get to run for office and other people have to earn $1 million to get there? There's something that I think that is growing with this privileged class that is driving ordinary Americans into great suspicion and distrust.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And if you've seen the new version of Battlestar Galactica, have you seen the new series of that?
I followed the Stargate universe, but I've not gotten on to Battlestar Galactica yet.
Battlestar Galactica is very, very good. I'd probably say it's in my opinion, one of the best ever sci-fi series to get out, particularly for a truther, and you want to analyze New World Order, you want to analyze psychopathy, and you want to analyze a post-collapse world and the sort of human struggle and mentality. It's really, really good for that. But the one thing that you sort of reminded me of out of that series was when the Admiral, who is of Battlestar Galactica, obviously, he retired. And his son becomes the new admiral, okay? And it becomes a point where they're basically having a revolution on board the ship because this sort of religious ceremony of trying to, you know, get up this freedom or trying to become gods. Basically, they're in space for too long. They go nuts, more or less. And what he asks this new young admiral is, when do you think we're going to have an admiral that's not called a Dharma? And it's very, very poignant fact that we have an oligarchy, a very clear and easily perceived ruling class. I'd like to thank you very much, Preston, for coming on the show with us today. Fire out your websites, and if you've got anything to say to the audience before we go, now's your chance.
Yeah, certainly. My website is www.prestonfleming.com, and my books are available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, the Apple iBookstore, Sony Bookstore, and the 40 Days of Camus is the first one. You can Google that or Google.
Yep, so there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Preston Fleming, Google him, and we'll see you again tomorrow.